How was it that you came to be a consultant for the federal government after World War II? How did that work out?
I knew a fellow who was an executive in the office of the secretary. I've forgotten what major program, Secretary of War, I guess, or Defense. And they asked me to come in and look at a program in the federal government. I think it was called a training program that primarily served the United States Secret Service and one or two other federal agencies that had security people. And that was located in Washington, D.C. It was headed up by one of our graduates. So I said, fine, I'd do it, and I did. And I, of course, had to make a report of what I'd found and what I was recommending as a result of the evaluation that I conducted. That got me started, and my report was on file. And subsequent to that, I was asked to come in and do other evaluations and also in other parts of the country. And I sat on a commission of four or five people in New York State and chaired the commission for a while and did a study of the John Jay College in New York when they started the program. Subsequently, we evaluated what they were doing. And as a result of these reports, I had developed a reputation for being fair and helping programs move in the right direction and make changes that are appropriate for the field. And so that's how I happened to become a consultant in the field. And of course, Michigan State had a policy in those days where you could serve in a consulting capacity. I think it was 2 days a month. Two working days a month, and then the weekends, of course, were yours to add to that if you wanted to. So I took advantage of that, and I don't know how many consulting jobs I had, but I complied with the university policy and didn't do more than I was permitted to. Mm-hmm. That's how I got to be a consultant. I began modestly with the federal government. Many people were convinced that I was making the right suggestions and recommendations, and my reputation spread.
How about overseas, in Germany?
Overseas, in Germany.
Did you have?
Yeah. I'm trying to think of Germany, what I did over there. Mm-hmm. I spent some time over there, and what I was doing there was evaluating the occupation of Germany and the law enforcement services. Mm-hmm. Well, I was unhappy with what I found, because what we did, which we do so often, we sent people over there to offer suggestions or were part of the occupation forces and tried to impose the American system on the German government. And needless to say, that didn't work. And I was opposed to that. And subsequently, after the war was over and the Americans moved out, why, the Germans returned to their original form of government with Länder, or whatever they called it in those days, where the law enforcement activities are part of a unit of government and not fragmented as it is in this country. Mm-hmm. I've often said that someday we're going to have to do something about that, but I don't think I'll ever live to see that happen. Because of the home rule concept that exists here. Mm-hmm.
The Länder was a division about equivalent to our states.
Yeah. And the Germans, as you know, had their police services within that community, the Länder. Business of trying to operate a fragmented police service in Germany just didn't work. And I was always opposed to that. And I thought someday in this country, we would also begin to consolidate law enforcement. Some parts of the country in a very modest way have done that, but it just isn't going to happen in the United States. There's too much interest in the home rule concept. And people want to be able to criticize their own department and, and also to get their sons and daughters into local police services. No, I don't look forward, don't anticipate anything like that happening in the United States. But where we've tried to do that, we've done it everywhere we've gone in a consulting capacity. The United States government has sent people over to the Far East. They're trying to impose the American system upon these other governments, and it doesn't work, and it won't work. So what happens after the Americans leave? Why they return to the original form.
How was it, you mentioned Asia, how was it that you ultimately became part of the Vietnam Project?
Well, I didn't know we had a, I didn't know this, but we had a political scientist on our staff, the new president,
Zim?
President Zim. And he was in exile in France, I think it was, when this political, this gentleman, I can't think of his name at the moment. He was a...
Wesley Fischel?
Wesley Fischel, thank you. Wes was on the staff here, and... he knew Jim, and they were personal friends. And I guess Wes must have visited with him in Europe and came back. And when they were looking for somebody to head up the government, he suggested Jim. And that's how Jim got involved. And also, when he did, he asked for help from this university to reestablish the government. And he asked for help in specific areas, law enforcement, finance, budgeting, and public relations, and that. So John Hanna, President Hanna, selected four people to go over there and make these, we had 2 weeks to make this study and evaluation, and make a report to the State Department and then come back to East Lansing. That's how I became a part of the Vietnam Project. Now, everybody else had, the economist had, what's his name, that used to be charged of the Economic Department, Kilt. Can't think of it. But Jim Dennison was a public affairs guy, one of Hanna's assistants. Ed Widener was chairman of the political science department, and I was in police ad, and the other fellow was in economics and dealt with budgets and policy dealing with finance. Can't think of his name. He was chairman of the Economics Department. Okay. Did you know it?
I don't know that one.
Somebody will know.
Probably Ralph Muckler mentioned it in his interview.
Yeah, I'm sure he did. What was the name of the fellow that went to Vietnam with us? The economist.
Charles Killingsworth?
Yeah, Charles Killingsworth.
Killingsworth, okay.
Thank you.
She's got. The rain has stopped, I will run to the store.
Okay. She's got a fantastic memory. Never met anybody like her. So she's my source of information. But anyway, Charles, well, I had a problem when I got over there. You see, the Jim controlled the police outside the major cities. And this military sect was headed by this man, or he was one of the people, and he was the general officer. And he was in charge of the police service in the major cities. And they didn't get along at all with Zien. And as a result, he refused to meet with me. And I was supposed to report on the police. So the first week, I pretty much spent my time spinning my wheels trying to get to see him and get information so I could make some rational and reasonable judgments about what they needed. And one of them I knew was equipment. They didn't have any equipment worth talking about. But anyway, I finally got disgusted with his behavior, and I went to Ed Wagner, who was chief of party, and told Ed that unless I could get an opportunity to meet with him and talk to him at some length and question him about what their needs were and have him give us some information, I couldn't make a report at all except the negative one. So Ed spoke to Ziem, I guess, primarily, as I remember, because the next time I made an attempt and he told me to try again, which I did, the man met with me. And I laid it out to him in cold, hard language terms. I said, look, General, I think I was a general also at the time, too. I've forgotten. But I said, unless you're willing to share information with me, I'm in a position to recommend the expenditure of millions of dollars from our government to provide you with equipment, personnel, whatever's needed, based on your recommendations to me. And I said, if you don't give that, I said, you'll get nothing. Well, that made a lot of sense to him, and all of a sudden I got information. So I spent but I had to talk, and, vigorously with him. So it worked out. That's how I got to Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. Was that in 1954, or did that come a little bit later?
No.
It was after Dien Bien Phu.
Yeah, it was when Diem took over.
Okay.
Whatever year that mm-hmm. was, I've forgotten, mm-hmm. if I ever knew. Mm-hmm. I've got pictures of that around here somewhere. Oh, and on the way over, by the way, we met with Magsaysay, the president of or my memory.
Is he in Malaysia?
No.
No.
I'll think of it. Mm-hmm. And we got a very nice reception from him. Philippines,
okay.
And he said that if there's anything we wanted to get in touch with a member of his staff, who was the captain, the Philippines Army, and stationed in Vietnam. And he would see that we were taken care of, and it worked. So except for the general officer I had to deal with mm-hmm. in the Vietnamese Army. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we met with Magsaysay, and shortly after that, he was assassinated, you might recall. He was a super guy, just very friendly, cordial. You know, anything you want to do, here's this guy, the head of the government. Mm-hmm. And so he was very helpful. And we used this other fellow. And then there was a colonel who ended up a two-star general who was in the U.S. Army who was also helpful to us. You know who he was, an American. Mm-hmm. I can't think of his name either. You're too bad Turner is in here, he'd remember. But anyway, as I said, it's been a long time. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we did that, and we made a report. We came back to Washington, and we met with the State Department staff, made our report to them, verbally and also a written report. And that was the end of our activity, except when the Ramparts magazine said we'd, and I was the brunt of all this because we got the CIA in there mm-hmm. doing a lot of undercover stuff, and that personnel that I had recruited were all CIA agents.
That's what the article said.
Let me tell you what those people were. Being an MP officer, having been in the military, police, being a reserve officer, I had contacts with the general officer who was in charge of the special agency in the military police who'd conducted investigations of illicit, illegal activity. And I got in touch with him and said I needed four people, good investigators, who would be a part of this team. Most of them were people, 25 or 26 people from around this country where I went and recruited, were pretty much people who had been in uniform police service in this country, primarily. But we needed some people who were part of the team and who could deal with the investigative aspects of the whole job. And that's what we got, the people from CIA. Now, they may have been undercover. I don't know. But they were represented to us and to me as officers who were in the military police who had special assignments in investigation. And that's what they claimed that we had. But that's what happened, and that's how we got involved with the Vietnam Project, and of course, Ramparts Magazine. You probably have seen that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Wrote that article.
Mm-hmm. That was in 1966, I think.
Yeah.
The
our state legislature conducted the investigation,
mm-hmm.
and we had to appear before the committee. Mm-hmm. And Hannah did, I did, Ralph Buckler testified. Mm-hmm. And answered their questions.
How long were you in Vietnam?
The first time it was just 2 weeks.
2 weeks, mm-hmm.
And then I returned because we had a staff of 26, 27 police people. I recruited from around the country, two people out of the New York State Police, other from the West Coast. We had a traffic expert from Grand Rapids, Michigan. People from the Detroit Police Department, all of them in the uniform service.
Mm-hmm.
So so we had quite a staff over there, and now I had to go over. We lost one man who fell off, a man out of the New York State Police. He fell off a barge. I don't know what happened, and all he had happened to fall. And falling apparently ripped his leg open, got infected, and the infection killed him.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Or he fell into the river, or?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's one of the things that happened. Did we lose anybody else over there? I don't recall. Mm-hmm. I don't think we did. But I used to go over about once every 12, 14 months, 16 months, just to have people cry on my shoulder. Some people had culture shock,
mm-hmm.
live in this environment, and the kind of people they were encountering. And I was ready to bring one fellow back, Dick Stricker, who was on our staff,
mm-hmm.
here, taught here. Stricker went from here to Texas A&M and taught their program. But anyway, he got ill, was having a terrible time, and of course I had families over there. Turner was over there. Mm-hmm. Turner did a super job, and he made a lot of contacts.
Did the South Vietnamese police, were there any of them trained on campus?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We had, I couldn't tell you how many, but we had, because of my interest, we had people from all over the world, really. We had Indonesians, Koreans, Vietnamese. We had British officers. We had German police here. And police from the Middle East. Turkey, I think, or I forgot. But several.
Were they integrated right into the regular courses, or were their courses taught separately for them?
They were taught separately. Mm-hmm. We had And we developed a staff from throughout the campus. We had social scientists come in, sociologists come in and talk about our culture so that these people would understand when they'd see a little kid smoking in an airport somewhere. Believe it or not, this happened. How could this happen? You know, you take that kid and you beat him up and tell him to stop smoking. Well, we explained to them that you don't do that in this country. But and we always had a debriefing going on at the end of their assignment here. Mm-hmm. Spent about 2 weeks with these officers in the group and explain what they saw, because a lot of things they saw in this country they didn't understand. Mm-hmm. So we'd have, and we involved our psychologists, sociologists, people from those staffs to help explain what they experienced and how we acted in our culture.
How would you say President Hanna was in terms of his support for the projects that were in Vietnam and some of the others around the world? What was his?
I think excellent, really outstanding. Mm-hmm. He apparently believed in it, obviously, because he went to several of these countries, you know, over the years. I know on one occasion, Ralph Speckler took him to the Far East, and they visited several facilities, Vietnam and others, that part of the world. And as far as I knew, Hanna was always very supportive. I'm not sure some of the deans were, but I don't know that.
Did you see any, in terms of financial benefits to the school, as a result of the Vietnam projects, in terms of federal contracts, or
no.
Did that there wasn't any
no.
major?
Nothing really, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Other than individuals coming here from their own governments or something.
Mm-hmm. Were there any other, in let's say the early 60s, after we got out of the Vietnam project or the project ended, were there any other similar things around the world that you were involved in?
No. I was involved here about 10, 12 years ago. I was a part of a team that was supposed to go into Russia. And there were about a dozen of us, I guess. We were to rendezvous in New York on a Friday night, spent Saturday being briefed. And I got a call from the group that was responsible for this development. They were somewhere in one of the states in the far west, forgotten which state, it was some years ago. And on Friday night, prior to our departure, and I was all ready to go, I had papers and stuff I had with me, so was everybody else. The rendezvous in New York, spent a day being briefed about what we were expected to do. In Russia, I think there were six or eight of us that had gone. Friday night, the Russians called and canceled the whole thing.
Oh, no.
And then I got a request later, some years later, to go again, but I turned that down. I just had no desire to have that experience again. Mm-hmm. I think that group went. That's good. But that's the only one I know of.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it would have been interesting, and I would have enjoyed that.
Mm-hmm. Interesting perspective. Going back to campus and the school, the development of the School of Criminal Justice, when did it actually become a separate entity or with a director? Were you the director at all from its earliest history? Or?
Yeah, pretty much until I retired.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, I was hoping they'd appoint Ralph the director, but mm-hmm. that other ideas, I guess.
When did you leave as a director?
When did I leave? When I retired.
When you retired.
Yeah. Well, I could have stayed on and taught, but I had other fish to fry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had the opportunity to go to take over the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center in Glencoe, Georgia.
No.
I didn't know about that vacancy. They contacted me as a result of the work I've done with other federal agencies in the training area and wanted to know if I'd be interested. And at that time, I said, yeah, that was one of the reasons I didn't get involved in activities here. And there, I think, around 170 people that applied for that civil service.
Mm-hmm.
And they screened out all but 14. And the 14 of us met in Washington. They reduced that number to 6. We were interviewed by the Assistant Secretary of Treasury, who was in charge of that particular project. And then the a board of people met us at Glencoe, where 5 of us. We were interviewed by this board with the Assistant Secretary of Treasury, McDonald, from Chicago, a lawyer from Chicago who was Assistant Secretary, was chairman of the group, and there were 5 or 6 of those people. They interviewed us for the job. And there were one of our graduates, incidentally, beside myself, was in that group. And I ended up being offered the job. The last thing I told them when they got through, incidentally, that's something that I was critical of. We were allowed 30 minutes for the interview with 5 different people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 30 minutes.
Not much.
A job like that.
Yeah. Just getting warmed up.
yeah. I couldn't believe it. But, and I had the one fellow on the who served the board was a timer. And when the half hour was up, he'd come in and say, time's up. So I left them saying, well, if you want leadership, I'll give it to you.
How long did you do that job?
About 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
And very interesting the way they operated. They had a guy from Texas who preceded me. I didn't know the first damn thing about training. But anyway, we upgraded the program. And the fellow that succeeded me is one of our graduates who had been in the federal service with LEAA, Law Enforcement Administration. And that program had been discontinued. Rinkovich,
mm-hmm.
Charlie Rinkovich was his name.
Did who were some of those prominent graduates? You remember any of those that you had contact with, or that later went on to other things? You remember any of those that you maybe kept contact with, or?
I used to have a 3x card file with people. And kept that active, especially the fellows that were looking for new opportunities,
mm-hmm.
and didn't want it generally known. And I'd contact them. There's one fellow, I can't think of his name, I've been trying to think of it, who established a consulting service in law enforcement. He's out in the Far East. He's in Hong Kong somewhere, and has established an office there and operates out of that office. And there was a fellow in New York State Police, the one guy that survived, the other fellow died from that infection.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of their names.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I apologize for that, but I should. But,
no. Whole career.
A long
and
time. And
I'm asking to think about things they hadn't thought about for a long time, probably.
That's right.
Yeah. What let's talk a little bit about some of the other people that you worked with. Yeah. And Ralph Turner, obviously I hadn't been able to interview him for this project, but what would you say was, would you talk a little bit more about his work as a professor and investigator, and what was his area of specialty?
Well, it was forensic science and investigation. He taught those courses, and he came out of the Kansas City, Missouri Police Department. Wolf was, and he went on, while he was here, he went to the University of California in Los Angeles and got a master's degree. Ralph got an advanced degree. Ralph was a very interesting guy, and I have a great admiration for him. He came here, and I'm sure that people turned him down when he sought to get into the academic world, although we never discussed it. He had a very severe speech impediment. Hmm. Well, that's a big handicap for a teacher. Mm-hmm. And he was trying to correct it. Before he left here, or before he retired, and long before that, he had managed to correct it. Mm-hmm. And frequently in the early days, he'd come into my office, either smoke a cigar or cigarette. He had to keep his mouth open a little bit in order to speak adequately and accurately. But Ralph overcame that handicap, which was a severe one, when he came here. But I saw something in Ralph that I apparently know others did. He's an extremely loyal guy. He had